Ever wondered how hard it is, like really hard, to challenge a death sentence?
Yeah.
Even, you know, when a lawyer really messes up?
Yeah, it's a good question.
Well, today we're diving deep into Terry Williams v. John Taylor.
Oh, okay.
This case, it kind of throws a wrench in the whole idea of ineffective assistance of counsel.
Uh-huh.
And federal court, you know, how much they defer to state courts in these capital cases.
Right.
So think of it like a crucial peek into how these legal standards actually work when it's literally life or death.
Yeah, this isn't just some like theoretical thing, Williams v. Taylor. It really shows you the huge obstacle someone faces trying to get a federal court to even look at a state capital case, even when there's strong evidence of major errors, like down at the state level.
Exactly. So in this deep dive, we're gonna unpack the facts, the important ones at least, and then we're gonna break down the legal arguments, the big ones.
Sounds good.
And really try to understand why this case, why it's still so important today, especially for understanding habeas corpus.
Right.
And, you know, the limits on federal review of state decisions, especially when we're talking about the death penalty.
Yeah, it's super relevant.
So we're using excerpts from Pace to Text for this deep dive.
Okay.
Gives us a breakdown of the case, some tips for the podcast, which we're definitely keeping in mind.
Good.
And the standard legal brief for Terry Williams v. John Taylor. So let's jump right in, okay?
Sounds good.
Where did this whole thing even begin?
Well, this case goes all the way back to 1986.
Okay.
Terry Williams gets convicted in Virginia, capital murder. And there were a bunch of other violent crimes tied in as well.
Okay.
Now, the jury, they end up giving him a death sentence.
Uh-huh.
And a huge factor in that decision was this idea of future dangerousness.
Future dangerousness. So, like, whether he'd be dangerous if he, you know, if he was ever released.
Exactly. And that's where things get, they get kind of tricky. When you start looking closer, you realize that Williams's lawyer, during sentencing, like the sentencing phase, they made some pretty big mistakes.
Some pretty big mistakes, huh?
Yeah, like the state habeas court even said so when they first looked at the case. They pointed out a few key failures. Like, for instance, Williams's lawyer never even looked into or presented his juvenile records.
His juvenile records.
Yeah, you know, from when he was a kid, in trouble with the law. That could have given the jury some important context about his behavior, where it came from, his early life.
I see, yeah.
And there's more. They didn't bring up any records about his home life either.
Which was?
Oh, it was really rough. Abuse, neglect, the kind of stuff that can really mess you up, you know?
Yeah, I get it.
And then, on top of all that, they didn't even call some crucial witnesses.
Like who?
Like his wife. They were estranged at the time, but still.
Uh-huh.
And his daughter. They could have talked about his relationships, you know, maybe shown some good sides to him that the jury never got to see.
Right, right.
And don't forget about Bruce Elliott. He was Williams's friend. The state habeas court, they specifically said that Elliott's testimony, it could have really helped. Painted Williams as someone who, even with all his issues, could probably handle being in prison. Less of a risk, you know?
Interesting. So this omitted evidence, like the stuff they missed, it would have shown a much more complete picture of Williams, like painted a fuller picture for the jury.
Absolutely. I mean, we're talking about his childhood, super deprived, abused, alcoholism in the family, even signs of like borderline intellectual disability,
wow.
All things that could have helped his case. And the jury never even knew about them.
So the state habeas court, they saw all this, right?
Yeah.
And they said, hold on, this isn't right. They said Williams got ineffective assistance of counsel during his sentencing. And they even recommended a whole new sentencing hearing.
Yep, they did. You'd think that'd be a step in the right direction, you know, fixing a big mistake.
Yeah, you'd think so.
But it didn't stick. The Virginia Supreme Court, they overturned that recommendation.
They did.
Yeah, they said, sure, maybe Williams's counsel messed up, maybe. Uh-huh.
But they didn't think it was enough to actually change the outcome. Like, under Strickland v. Washington, you know that case, right?
Yeah, yeah, Strickland. So the highest court in Virginia is basically saying, okay, there might have been errors, but they weren't big enough deals to change the sentence.
Exactly. And that's what sets the stage for the whole thing moving to federal court.
Right.
Williams, he kind of hit a dead end in the state system.
Yeah.
So he files for habeas corpus in federal court.
Okay.
And get this, the federal district court. They actually sided with Williams. gave him what he was asking for.
It did.
Yeah, they said the Virginia Supreme Court's decision, it went against clearly established federal law.
Mm.
Specifically, they pointed to AEDPA.
AEDPA, the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act. So Williams scores a win at the district court level, but it's not over yet, right?
Nope, not even close. Yeah. The Commonwealth of Virginia, they weren't having it. They appealed the decision to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals.
And the Fourth Circuit, well, they reversed the district court's ruling. They sided with the Virginia Supreme Court. Back to the death sentence for Williams.
So we've got the state habeas court finding ineffective assistance of counsel, the federal district court agreeing with that, and then the Fourth Circuit coming in and saying, nope, the state court was right all along.
It's a mess, right?
It really shows how complicated and frustrating this whole federal review process can be, especially in cases with such high stakes.
No kidding.
So now we're at the big question, the really important one. Did the Virginia Supreme Court totally miss the mark when they applied Strickland v. Washington?
Under ADPA too, right?
Right, under AEPA. Mm-hmm. Like, did they get Strickland so wrong that it was unreasonable? Especially when they decided that Williams wasn't really harmed by his lawyer's mistakes during sentencing.
That is the million-dollar question. And to understand why the Fourth Circuit came to their conclusion, we got to get into the weeds of the legal stuff that governs these claims.
Okay, so the legal framework, the rules of the game.
Exactly. And the big one here is Strickland, with its two-pronged test for ineffective assistance of counsel.
Okay, Strickland, remind us about that two-pronged test.
Right. So to prove ineffective assistance, the defendant has to show two things.
Two things.
One, their lawyer's performance was just plain bad, like objectively deficient, meaning it fell way below what a reasonable lawyer would do.
So basically the lawyer sucked at their job.
Yeah, pretty much. And two, that bad performance actually hurt the defendant's case, meaning there's a good chance that if the lawyer had done their job right, the outcome would have been different.
The but-for argument.
Exactly. But for the lawyer screwing up, things would have gone differently. But here's the kicker. On top of Strickland, we've got AEDPA.
Right, AEDPA.
And the AEDPA, it puts limits on federal courts when they're looking at habeas appeals from state prisoners.
Limits on their power, yeah.
Exactly. A federal court can only step in and grant relief if the state court's decision was totally off base. Like, it either went against a clear rule set by the Supreme Court, or it was based on a messed up understanding of the facts.
So the federal court can't just disagree with the state court. It has to be more than that.
Way more. The state court has to be not just wrong, but unreasonably wrong. That's a much tougher standard to meet.
Much tougher. And then there's Lockhart v. Fretwell.
Ah, Lockhart, yes. That case added another wrinkle. It said that prejudice under Strickland, it's not just about whether the outcome might have been different.
Okay.
It's about whether the whole process was fundamentally unfair. Like whether the lawyer's mistakes were so bad that the result can't be trusted.
So not just a different verdict, but a tainted process.
Exactly. Think of it like this. The system isn't just looking for any old error. It's looking for errors that shake the very foundation of the process.
Got it. So we have Strickland's two prongs, deficient performance and prejudice. Then AEDPA comes in and says, federal courts give those state court decisions some serious respect. And then Lockhart adds this idea of fundamental unfairness.
You got it. It's a lot, I know.
It is. So with all that in mind, let's look at why the Fourth Circuit sided with Virginia in Terry Williams. Why did they say, nope, the death sentence stands?
Okay, so their reasoning, it really boils down to how they viewed the evidence, both the bad stuff against Williams, what the prosecution hammered on, and the good stuff that his lawyer missed during sentencing.
Good and the bad, yeah.
Right. And a big part of their decision was that the evidence against Williams, the bad stuff, it was just too strong. They called it overwhelming.
Overwhelming. What did that include specifically?
Well, they talked about his crime spree, not just the murder he was convicted for, but a whole bunch of violent acts around the same time.
Thanks.
Then there was his behavior in prison, documented, not good, and his past convictions. All of it together, it painted a picture of a very dangerous guy.
Someone likely to offend, again, the future dangerousness idea.
Exactly. The prosecution, they made a strong case based on his history of violence.
Right, right. So how did the Fourth Circuit view the mitigating evidence, the stuff Williams' lawyer didn't present?
Well, this is where they really differed from the district court. They basically said, that missing evidence, it wasn't that big of a deal.
Really?
Yeah, they said the potential witnesses, the ones who could talk about his tough upbringing, they were mostly relatives.
Mostly relatives.
Implying, you know, maybe a juror wouldn't see them as totally reliable.
Right? Biased, maybe?
Exactly. And they also said, even if the jury had heard that evidence, it wouldn't have changed their minds. It wouldn't have outweighed all the bad stuff that the prosecution already proved.
So the Fourth Circuit is saying, look, even with that extra evidence, he's still a violent guy. The jury would reach the same conclusion.
Exactly. And there's a quote from the majority opinion that really sums it up. They said the omitted evidence barely would have altered the profile of this defendant.
Barely would have altered the profile. That's pretty clear.
Right. They're basically saying the Virginia Supreme Court was reasonable when they applied Strickland. They weighed the bad stuff against the good stuff, even the missing good stuff, and they decided it wouldn't have made a difference.
So even though the defense lawyer messed up big time, the Fourth Circuit is saying the evidence against Williams was just so powerful that those mistakes wouldn't have changed the outcome.
Yeah, and the Virginia Supreme Court wasn't unreasonable to come to that conclusion.
This brings us to the big takeaways, especially for law students out there. The future lawyers of America.
Future lawyers, listen up. This case, it teaches some hard lessons.
Hit us with them.
Okay, first off, even if a defense attorney makes major mistakes during sentencing in a capital case, it might not be enough to get relief, especially if the prosecution has a really strong case with tons of aggravating factors.
So a strong prosecution can outweigh even serious defense errors.
Especially with AEDPA in the mix. Remember, federal courts have to give a lot of deference to state courts.
Right, AEDPA ties their hands a bit.
It does. And that means defense attorneys in capital cases, they have a huge responsibility. They can't afford to miss anything when they're preparing for sentencing. Because if they do, it could cost their client their life.
No pressure, right.
Seriously. This case, it shows how important it is to be thorough, to leave no stone unturned. Every piece of mitigating evidence, it matters.
Every detail, every witness, it all adds up.
Yeah. And another thing, Terry Williams, it shows how hesitant federal courts are to question state court decisions, mm-hmm. especially in death penalty cases. Remember AEDP?
Oh, yeah.
It sets a really high bar. It's not enough for the federal court to disagree with the state court. The state court's decision has to be wildly unreasonable.
Objectively unreasonable. That was the phrase they used.
Right. Objectively unreasonable. And that's hard to prove.
Very hard.
And it brings up this tension we have in our legal system. On the one hand, we want to make sure everyone gets a fair trial, especially when someone's life is on the line.
Due process, everyone gets their day in court.
Right. But we also value finality in legal decisions. We don't want cases dragging on forever.
Right. There has to be an end at some point.
Yeah. And Terry Williams really highlights that struggle.
It does. And remember, we're dealing with different legal standards here. Strickland says there has to be a reasonable probability of a different outcome if the lawyer hadn't messed up.
Right.
And then Lockhart comes in and says, hold on, it has to be fundamentally unfair.
Not just a different result, but a flawed process.
Exactly. And then AEDPA says, okay, federal courts, even if you think it's unfair, you can only step in if the state court was outrageously wrong.
Three layers of difficulty for someone trying to challenge a state court's decision?
Three layers. And in Terry Williams, the Fourth Circuit, they specifically said the Virginia Supreme Court was reasonable when they described those missing witnesses as being mostly family.
Yeah, they didn't see that as an unfair way to characterize them.
And they agreed with the state court's conclusion. Even with that missing family testimony, there wasn't a good chance the jury would have given Williams a different sentence.
Not with all the evidence stacked against him.
In the Fourth Circuit, they say the Virginia Supreme Court, they did the right thing. They weighed the aggravating factors, the bad stuff, against the mitigating factors, the good stuff, even the missing good stuff, just like Strickland says they should.
They followed the playbook, basically.
So, Terry Williams v. John Taylor, it's a tough case. It shows how difficult it is to overturn a death sentence in federal court, even when there's evidence that the defense lawyer made serious errors.
It's a steep uphill battle.
Strickland, Lockhart, AEDPA, they all combine to make it really, really hard to win these appeals.
If they do.
It's a reminder that having a good lawyer at the state level, it's absolutely crucial, especially in a capital case.
Your life could depend on it, literally.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Terry Williams v. John Taylor, we're left with this big question. How do you overturn a death sentence when the system makes it so hard?
That's the question, isn't it?
We've got this tension between wanting to make sure everyone gets a fair trial and recognizing that legal decisions have to be final at some point.
Finding that balance, it's tricky.
It is. And it makes you think about what it really takes to prove ineffective assistance of counsel, and how much power federal courts should have to second-guess state courts.
Huge questions, yeah.
So, listeners, here's something to ponder. Given what the Fourth Circuit said in Terry Williams, what kind of mitigating evidence does it take to actually overcome a mountain of aggravating evidence? Like, how strong does that good stuff have to be to outweigh the bad stuff?
That's a good question to think about.
And how does AEDPA, with its high bar for federal intervention, how does that affect the ability of federal courts to step in and ensure fairness in state capital cases, even when there's a strong argument that the defense lawyer screwed up?
These are the kinds of questions that keep legal scholars up at night.
They really are. If you're interested in learning more, we encourage you to check out Strickland v. Washington, Lockhart v. Fretwell, and of course, ADPA.
Those are the big three in this area of law.
They are. And they offer a fascinating and sometimes troubling look into the world of capital punishment and federal habeas review.
Definitely worth a deeper dive.
So that's it for our deep dive into Terry Williams v. John Taylor. Thanks for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
Until next time.
See ya.